And we're back with another episode of the Work Week After Hours. How you doing, Steve?
I'm doing really well, but man, it has been a week like a month, if I'm honest. It's been filled with lots of transitions in my life that I've never experienced before. And how about for you?
Well, it's certainly full of transitions that I've not experienced before. We're gearing up for our residency appointment where we get our official residency here in Portugal and school starting up soon and all that fun stuff. So yeah, it's we've taken tours of schools and all that fun stuff. And I think that's probably a good segue in this week's episode of just sharing a bit of, you know, a back to school episode, if you will, of, you know, sharing, you know, our thoughts on the current state of the world and back to school world. Mm-hmm. And then maybe kind of how that relates and give some maybe challenging viewpoints on academics and maybe offer up some ideas around that as well. So.
Yeah, I think it's a really timely topic. We could call the show today the Work Week After Summer. We could call it the Work Week After High School, the Work Week After Schools in the U.S. I mean, we dropped my 18-year-old son, Connor, off at Loyola Marymount University over the weekend. Much to my surprise, we had been notified that there is a three-day new parent orientation, not one, not two, but 3 days of events to, you know, partake in. And all my friends had told me, just your kid does not want you there. Like, drop them off and get out. Yeah. But, you know, speaking of, you know, attending an event like that, you know, with the experience and the perspective that you and I have, Shane, I was attending that whole experience from multiple levels, you know, as a dad. You can't help you know, but think about so many parts of your life when you're your child's age, when they were doing that, you're soaking in this new place where your kid's going to be and trying to absorb their sense of safety and opportunity there and what the school's philosophy is. Cause I don't know anything about the school other than, you know, a few visits and what I read,
sure.
But also as someone steeped in the future work, you know, how are they shaping this experience? How is the school? How's the administration? How are the teachers, how is that school community thinking about this? So yeah. I was going into it just excited to experience the whole show, you know,
sure.
And
sure.
That's one of the things I wanted to, you know, cover was that. But, you know, before we get there, I wanted to just lay down some observations of the whole college admissions process and college application process, which I found interesting. You know, we went on probably maybe 8 or 9 campus tours last summer and this, you know, this fall before my son applied to schools. And every single school began every single tour with the same question. Okay, can all the kids introduce themselves and tell us what you're looking to study? What are you going to focus on? What are you going to major in? And I couldn't help but just have a knee-jerk immediate reaction of just frustration that I felt is the wrong question kids should be asked. It's like we're almost expecting them to declare something they have no experience or preparation to declare in life. And, you know, how does anyone when they're 18, how does anyone when they're 25 know anything about anything enough to know, oh yeah, I want to double down on this. Now, hey, there's people I met that knew they had the gift of foresight and like, I'm going to be a this or I'm going to be a that, but that definitely wasn't me. And I feel like it's not a favorable approach. It's not a preferred approach. And what I wish, and I've got to write about this or post about this, is I think the better question to be asking students when they're joining your school is, hey, if you come here, what are you excited about exploring? You know, what do you want to check out when you're here? Because that's not an academic focused question. It's the experience here, which I think is the bigger part of what you get in a university opportunity is, yeah, the classroom's great, but man, all the other stuff, cultural exposure, the exposure to diverse, you know, perspectives and experience, kids from all over the world. My son, I talked to my son for the first time today. I met all these kids from New York. I'm like, yeah. And I said, just so you know, I went to kids New York too in my school. He said, yeah, Dad, but you were in school in Connecticut. I know. I said, but there's something about the California mentality that's not too far adrift from how New Yorkers think about the world. Yeah. And that's just, he's already, you know, classes didn't even start and he's already starting to learn things, which I think is super cool, you know?
Yeah.
What's the early exposure for you and Sarah with the new schools and new approach to, I don't know, maybe it's a new approach to education even that you're seeing.
Yeah, I think a little bit. So kind of to your point, so I obviously have a bunch of experience in helping kids go into college with my previous business. And one of the things that I remember about Australia is when they are 17 years old, they have to enroll in a certain program and they pick a university, or they have to select a university on a certain career path. And that's how they get picked to a university to go to. It's not like what we do in the States. And I'll be honest, it always has confused me because I think the number is, and I'm sure this has changed, but at one point, the number in the United States was the average college in like freshman enrollee, by the time they graduate, they actually change their major 3.1 times, I think.
That's good.
So what happened? And so here's what happens, and we all know this, right? And this is one of those things where we think about, we're like, yeah, you're telling me something I already know. Well, why aren't we actually changing it and fixing it, right? So when you go to college, what happens? So I'll give you an example. When I was in Kentucky, I was within an 8-hour driving distance of 63% of the population. That means a majority of the population of the United States doesn't live in California. It doesn't live in all these places, Texas. It's not where it lives. It lives in middle America, right? So what happens? Middle America doesn't get the same exposure that you get in California. You don't get on these different things, but they go to these universities. What happens? You realize, much like we've talked about, much like we talked about in the future of work, you realize, oh, wait a second, what's this SEO director? I don't know, nobody in my town, I've never heard of this before. I didn't know this was a thing. What do you mean people get paid to go and work in the ocean? Or what do you mean, like, this is a thing that I can go, like, what is this animation something, like, you know, these different things, and it's happening more so now. It's happening so fast that your son graduated high school in May. The reality of it is, by the time he stepped foot on campus at Loyola, there's jobs and careers that have been created that there aren't even degrees for. Mm-hmm. Right? In that short period of time, that's how fast this has happened. So it's like, right. How are we making decisions? I am a fan. I'm a big fan of the gap year. You and I fall on completely different experience spectrums from an education standpoint. I don't think there's any right or wrong answer other than what's best for the kid, right? Like that, like know your child, right? And know your child and keep your own.
Let me just jump in here, Shane, because this is not a direction I thought we were going to go into, and I'm happy we are, because it makes complete sense and it's worth our time and attention, which is, you know, you talk about the researchers showing an increase in students changing majors, an increase in students dropping out of school, a decrease in students enrolling in school, an increase in students getting certificates or going to employers that are going to provide the education. And then we take a look at what's going on in the, I don't know, education sector, in the healthcare sector, where we've got teachers and nurses flooding out the doors at a pace we've never seen before. And on one level, and this is going to be way oversimplified, how can we be surprised by that? Because many of these people locked in before they knew they had dozens of other choices. And so when presented with the moment of time, we talked about this over the weekend, remember? When presented a moment in time where the world hit pause, all of a sudden you're hitting a viewpoint of life and your career and your choices you've never seen before. And maybe you're looking at just your circumstances differently and what other choices you could make, and seeing that they're more possible, more likely that you can make those moves. And in healthcare, we've talked earlier that you know, I did some research for the Healthcare Association, you and I both did, and we saw in the last 2-3 years, 85 new unicorns in healthcare.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's 85 new, not just business, but a lot of new industries where you can take your nursing background and apply it in a different way. So, you know, I worry the models that we've been, and I'm not here to blame, point fingers, yeah. institutional education's broke. I'm not here to say that. I'm just trying to have everyone take a break and say, don't be surprised by all this downstream stuff we're seeing, because it started when we said, hey, you should focus on this. You should go do this versus you should taste from the buffet table, take a gap year, do some internships before you even are allowed to pick a major.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, I mean, it's, I don't know how to change it. But it's certain, I mean, it's ripe for disruption. I think a lot of universities are aware of that. I think a lot of universities are trying to do those things. The problem is when you have this very large institutional model that involves so many different people and the financial structure it is, it's kind of like a big organization when it comes time to implement remote work or, you know, these different things. It's not going to happen as fast as it should happen. And it's not going to happen as fast as even the people trying to make it, you know, change, and the people at the top trying to make it change. It's not going to happen. It just can't. It mm-hmm. physically cannot. So, you know, it's really interesting because we all have more options, right? We all have more options. And if we live in a world where more like, why are we like, it's almost like the world of work and the world of education were the last ones. Like we're saying this thing, they're the last ones to experience what's happened. Like, think about how, like we talked about this before. Think about how we've consumed music or TV, or like that's been disrupted for a long time. We've been getting more options for a long time in those things, right? Mm-hmm. That barrier of entry mm-hmm. is there. The whole world is getting more options, right? Like we have mm-hmm. more options. We have more options to eat now because we have Uber Eats and Deliveroo mm-hmm. and these things. Mm-hmm. Like we have more options. The world of work just didn't catch up, right? And there's different theories behind it. I've talked to you about one that I'm going to do a mm-hmm. little bit of research under that I feel like played a big part in all of this. But mm-hmm. your book, obviously, massively timely. Workquake, COVID, accelerate it threw accelerant on the fire, and it forced people into such an uncomfortable state that they were beyond the point of discomfort, and it made them make a big change in their life. And you know, now the education world's seeing it, right? Like, why? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. Like, kids at 18 and 19 years old, or your son. You're one of your younger sons. By the time he gets to college, I can't wait to hear those conversations of what he says to you, because he's going to be telling you, well, Dad, actually what I need to be doing, I need to go over here and do this, because if you do this and you do this, like, yeah, that's cool if I go do that. And I can always go back and do that, but I'm looking at this way. And
right.
And we have these options, and we have this mm-hmm. access to more stuff. We have to realize that society has to change to accommodate for more. And listen, we get on here a lot and talk about the power of the individual contributor, the employee. Mm-hmm. That also means that maybe we should actually look at changing some of the laws around being able to let some people go. If we need to make an organizational shift, and the board signs off and we do a vote and we do it in some ethical way that says, no, we actually, we've got a whole group of 700 people over here. We need to try and upskill them, which mm-hmm. is a whole nother topic that I wanted to get into at some point about the whole letting people go. Could we have actually upskilled those people in a different way to better serve rather than those things? But that's neither here nor there.
But that is part of the whole architecture that we're building now, which is you are a this and not you are many. You are capable of learning many things, doing many things, adapting and growing. And I will tell you, I had my first conversation with my son today since I dropped him off or left him on Saturday. My tears still aren't dry. And he's like, you know, Dad, you know, this econ course I'm taking is not even considered part of the business, a major path. And I'm thinking of going that route, so I'm not going to get credit for it. And I'm sitting there, my head's ready to explode. I'm like, don't worry about it. And that's when I fully appreciate that I'm going against the grain on such a magnitude. I can't stop my son from feeling. All his friends are saying, hey, you know, that doesn't get credit for that. All the teachers are like, hey, you're not going to get credit for the business over there. All his coaches, all his mentors, all his classmates, all his friends are like, no, no, no. This is like, you got to check this box if you want to go over there. And I'm like, no, yeah. You just got to learn how to learn, you know, and he's not buying it. You know, so I'm sort of like, okay, well, you know, just, you know, you can drop it. You can take different things, just trying to increase your options. But what I'm trying to say is the inertia is deep. It's deep rooted. And when you've got kids being asked by everyone in their world, not just their parents, their aunts, their uncles, their friends, their cousins, their neighbors, and the guy in the store that you see, like all those people are honing you into a model that fits you into, you have to study this to be that. Yeah. And it's just, it's all rooted in goodness, which is we don't want you to wind up out in the world naked. That's what it's all about. And it's good. It's well-intentioned.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, and I feel like, you know, we are both poster childs of this coming from completely different paths. You know, I was, you know, out of the college nest and you were kicked out of the family nest neither of us had a fucking idea what we're going to do.
Yeah.
And it worked out really well. You know?
Yeah. I mean, that's wild. Yeah, it is. It really is when you think about it. Like you came from this route, went to college, went through your career path. I went the absolute opposite of no college, I probably didn't graduate high school. They just didn't want me. Like they didn't want me hanging around anymore. So, you know, I got a 15 on the ACT. Algebra 1 is the only math class, you know, that I ever actually passed. Like technically Algebra 2 I did. I think I got like a 61, but I didn't pass. But I say that to say I manage your financial livelihood. You don't have any concerns or any discomfort whatsoever. You know, but that's what I want to like. I want to expose the light on that to like say like this is I didn't pass English class. I don't know. I can't spell. Like there's some there's some things I can't spell. I can't do. But I communicate on your behalf to some of the biggest companies in the world. There's no concern. You see the emails. You see. I know how to do it. And it's because I was allowed to take a different path to have hands on. And I created, I'm not going to say allowed to take a different path. Cause that's not true. I had to take most of what I've had. I had the lack of fear and the lack of, I resented and disliked my family situation so much that I was going to do everything against anything that everybody else's family was doing, because I didn't, none of it ever felt comfortable for me. Like it never felt comfortable. Doing my own thing felt comfortable. And for me, it was going down a path of saying, okay, like let's look at this and figure out how we navigate this. And I'm just going to make a hope. I mean, I'm trying to work on something right now that's the most grandiose idea that we've ever tried to put together. I have no business thinking of this and trying to put it together, but we just had a talk off air. You know, the caliber of people I'm running this by and communicating, they're like, oh, that's a great idea. Like we'd love to. Right. But I didn't take that path. And I shared the light on that because I want, like, it's okay for kids to go to college, but it's also okay for kids to say, I don't know what I want to do. And I think our society will get better at that. By saying, go, I tell my 15-year-old son, I just bought him a MacBook computer. He wants to learn. His goal, I gave him an idea that he thinks, like, he wants to, when he graduates high school, he wants to travel around Europe for a year or two and figure this whole thing out of, like, just bouncing around and figuring out how to make money. So I said, here's a MacBook computer. This will create more opportunity for you than you could ever imagine. Run with it. And I said, you know, but it's up to you. But it's up to you. And I said, I don't care if you work in construction. I don't care if you work in sanitation. I don't care what it is. As long as you work and give everything you have and you're happy. And you're a good person. That's all I care about. Have a good work ethic. Be happy and be a good person. That's it. I literally don't care. There's no expectation. And right. I think that actually, instead of like, I think it gets stigmatized sometimes when we do that of, well, you're just going to create another lazy, you know, another lazy work around the world with no, I actually disagree, because I haven't even told you about this. He's linked up with a friend here. There used to be a camera that sat behind me, a nice Sony A7 III camera. I've now given it to my son. I've given him my camera bag. I've given him everything. They're going around and filming. He just came in today and got a tripod. They're going out tomorrow and doing some filming. We had a big family get together over here in Lisbon. Other families came over for dinner. I cooked for 15 people, and the boys had been talking about some business ideas. So we said, okay, hey, pitch us your ideas. And these two boys, they took 15 minutes to go back and confer. They came out and they pitched these ideas, and they want to start this brand.
You had a Shark Tank in your living room.
The parents were sitting around the kitchen table. And,
that's awesome.
They're coming up with a brand. They're going to vlog. I've just secured a domain to where they're going to have a teens podcast from the Teen Expat View. They're also going to start a business. I secured the domain to where they're going to offer up tours for families who are coming over here and looking, who might have teenagers, and they'll take the teens around and show them around and show them what it's like and all those things.
Oh, that's huge. That is a big unmet need.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they're going to do some apparel out. They've mapped this all out. Like, they've got it all figured out. And he's 15 years old, and this is something that he can grow to other countries and do all these different things. And the experience that he's going to learn, even if this goes nowhere, by planning and figuring it all out, is going to put him light years ahead of most kids who go to college thinking that that's going to be the solution to their career path. And
right.
Yeah, so it's, I mean, that's my take, and that's how I go about this thing. And I want it to be known that, like, it's okay. Like, both ways are okay. Mm-hmm. Don't go to again, I know we're not, like, kids should not go to college because it's what their parents want them to do. They should go to college because they think it's the best thing for them. And they've asked questions, and parents create a space that says, if this isn't for you, that's okay. Let's talk about it.
And yeah. Yeah.
That's my take.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I don't know. I don't think in my home, my household, there was a lot of pressure to go to college, but the community that my boys are in, that's the path.
Sure.
And we talked a while ago, gosh, that episode that happened maybe before we started actually recording, where parents are photoshopping their kids in the whole Rick Singer fiasco.
And
for a lot of parents, sadly, where their kids go to school is more about the parents' ego than the kids' destiny. And that's a shame. And that's a real shame. And I hope those of you listening in, you know, I hope that's not how you're thinking about this. You know, you want your kid to get in a good school so you can go to your Starbucks get togethers with your friends and say, well, my kid's in a such and such. That, I mean, that's not helping your kid. Yeah. As much as you may think it is. And I fully agree with you. Like, I've told all my boys, and they look at me like I'm crazy. I'm like, I don't want you to graduate in 4 years. I don't. I want you to take a gap year. I want you to learn another language. I want you to go somewhere that's not English speaking. Yeah. I'm okay if it's the UK or Australia, but because they are very different. But I'd really like you to have that experience. And they just sort of look at me like, you don't know what you're doing. And if I know, I'm not going to do that. But I finally have my older son saying, yeah, you know, junior year is probably the year I'm going to look to go, you know, take a semester abroad or something like that. I'm like, that a boy,
yeah,
you know? And so I'm keeping that on the forefront because that's an experience, you know, and you and I have talked about this before. Yeah. I learned so much, outside the classroom. That's really hard to characterize. And I had the great fortune of having a grandmother that could cover my college mostly, and the rest was student loans. The cost of college today is just—it's really out of reach for most, and that's another story for another time around the polarization in our in American society in particular. But I wonder, you know, if universities are really, really starting to recognize that. In some are, like, I think, what is it? Arizona State University has an enormous online offering. Enormous.
Yeah. Yep. Liberty University does too. They actually have the largest online catalog in the world.
And the consumption of education just should be different. But we're still not at a point where anyone's comfortable to sort of say, oh yeah, my kid's taking the gap year without the, feeling inferior, feeling like I got to be on the defensive and feeling like I got to justify it. At least in the folks I'm hanging out with, I know one person who is, and it is, they are playing defense all the time. All these people, like, what's wrong with her? What's wrong with this person?
Here's what I wonder. I wonder, and you and I can actually run a test on this and potentially do another education episode. I wonder how many universities this fall in some part of their curriculum in each professional career path have some sort of education about doing your job remote, hybrid, in any form.
Mm-hmm.
Is it all still just, you're going to go into an office, you're going to sit there, this is what you're going to do? Because I'm not even going to dive into the numbers. This could be a whole nother episode and we can maybe bring some university folks on, but
my guess is,
I may be way wrong. My guess is it's less than 30% of the universities are even having the conversation that's going to be like, and I'm not talking about mentioning it. It's a possibility. I'm talking about helping them psychologically understand the benefits and the pros and cons of doing it and what that job career looks like, because there's going to be a lot of people who started university this week. 4 years from now, they're going to walk out into the workforce and their jobs will never be in person.
That's true. And to me, I mean, I'm starting to see a lot of startups evolve to or commence to start going after some of this, but everything from, platforms to help employees purchase the equipment they need to be able to be successful at home. I'm not seeing how do you build culture, trust, how do you arrive at high performance? How do you help someone manage their whole? I mean, this is a bigger play, right? It's not just work when you're hybrid. It's you're helping someone live. It is the future of life, as someone told us, not the future of work or future of living. And that's a beautiful thing worth going after.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. I think 30% to me, you're aiming way too high.
Yeah.
I would be happy if it's 15%. The schools are even having that conversation. Yeah. Like, what future should we be preparing them for, and how is it different, and how do we know it will be different in the future?
Totally. No.
Yeah.
Some good thought-provoking things there that maybe will, a nice short, sweet episode that maybe will spark some thought process. And, again, it's just, I think Gary Vee talks about university, and he talks about something that I 100% believe in. If you go to university, the most important thing you can do in your 4 years there is over a 4 year span, trying to individually meet and have a one-on-one conversation with every single student on that campus. Find a way, because you're actually going to make conversation with the CEO of X company X, the CFO of company here, the inventor of this, your Rolodex, you and I talk about in our network and, the value to call in a favor, the value to leverage those things is worth more than any amount of money that I could ever, I'm not concerned with my, those things.
Yeah. And I'll just throw it out there, and I'm not doing this to name drop. I'm doing it out of humor, because I never would have thought this was coming, but I played a lot of intramural basketball. One kid on this one team was this goofy Californian, gangly, freckly face, always wore K-Swiss shoes, which I thought were totally weird. So much fun and so fun to be around. Couldn't play basketball very great. Turned out to be Michael Bay, the director of all these incredible Transformers, Pearl Harbor, unbelievable, like boom. And another guy in my freshman hall, he goes on to co-write and produce one of the most successful comedy series, Will and Grace, for years. And that guy was really funny and a goofball. I never would have seen that coming. Have I kept up with them? No, I haven't. I have a lot. They're totally big time. But you just don't know who you're going to be and who other people should, why other people should want to know you as well as other people. And that's just a great recommendation. And not just, you know, classmates, like teachers, professors, like everybody. Guest lecturers. I mean, it is just, that is a opportunity of a lifetime to really.
If you're a student, if you're a student, you should literally start like a 30-minute podcast. And I'm like, make it like, go to the university and say, look, I'm going to do this. If you'll help me, I just want to interview every single person on campus for the next two semesters. I'll do it. I'll do the time. I'll figure out a way and just interview them and just have a casual conversation and just talk about where they're from. The value in that at scale 12 years down the road. Will be the most valuable thing that you've ever done in your life. I guarantee you, because of the stories and the heartbreak and the things that you're going to understand. If I was, you know, we've given some advice. So if I was speaking to a college student somewhere, that's what I would do. I would say, hey, let's go about it that way. And you'd be surprised. The people you'll talk to and the relationships, you might find your future wife, your future husband. You might find like so many things that are going to come out that you can't even wrap your head around. So that was a good one. That's a great episode.
And thanks for tuning in, everybody, to another episode of The Work Week After Hours. We gave a short version for you, the back to school special, if you will.
Absolutely.
I'm Steve Cadigan here with
Shane Howard.
And we'll see you next time.
Cheers.